going old school style tonight. Whiteboard. Marge, I'm going to try to get it where you can read it. So when I write up here, Marge, and you can't read it, I need you to shake your head like so, and then I'll try to finagle it, okay? All right. How many of you have ever heard of the TV show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? The majority of us have, right? And we know where that comes from. You get all these adults, all these smart adults, and they're asked questions from elementary school textbooks from, I believe it's grades 1 through 5. And if you get them all right and you beat the kid, you get $1 million. That's pretty sweet, right? You get the concept. And it's kind of humbling, isn't it, when if you ever watched it and you missed a question that a second grader should know. I'm like, man, I'm an idiot, right? Well, tonight I want to do something very similar in that way. So I want to ask it in this way. I want to ask the question, not are you, but am I, emphasis on I, better than a Marge, you got that? Can you read that? Three things. Tom can't read it, though. How about I read from behind the white? What do we think about that? Everybody read it now? Three things we're going to be thinking about. First one is in Ephesians chapter 4. Open up there. Am I, and again, I'm saying I, because this is Wes preaching to Wes. This isn't Wes preaching to you. This is Wes preaching to himself. Am I better than the first group, the Gentiles? We got to think about what the Gentiles do, don't we? When Paul talks about the Gentiles, you know who he's normally talking about? He's talking about those, we call them dirty pagans. They're out there and they're worshiping all these other gods and they're doing all this stuff. But in Ephesians chapter 4, if you want to begin in verse 17, Paul's going to describe these Gentiles to these Ephesian brethren. And notice what he says about them in verse 17. So this I say, and affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer just as the Gentiles also walk. And this is how they walk. In the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity and greediness. When you read that, what do you think about this group of people? I think about sick people. I think about, man, I hate it for them. I also think about rebellious people. Let's go back and let's look at them kind of one by one. Go back there in verse 18 beginning. The very last phrase of verse 17, in fact, is the first one. What's it said about their mind? They walk in the futility of their mind. I'll be honest, this is the phrase that made me come up with a sermon. I was back in Alabama and they were studying Ephesians and they were in Ephesians 4. And he was going through this. And it was this particular phrase that jumped out at me. I thought, how many Christians are walking around in the futility of their mind? We're going after our own wisdom, personal wisdom, rather than the wisdom of God. Man's mind is futile if God is not in the picture. That's the whole point of the book of Ecclesiastes. All things under the sun are vain. They are fleeting. And when something is futile, it means it's worthless. It is not of any value whatsoever. And these people walk around and you remember this phrase in Romans chapter 1, as Michael went through a few weeks ago. You've seen about verse 21 of Romans 1. Again, these idolaters, people are described as being futile in their thoughts. I would never be futile in my thoughts, would I? My thoughts are always the same as God's thoughts. No, unfortunately, sometimes my mind is futile as well. And notice how it says in verse 18, being darkened in their understanding. Remember when Jesus comes on the scene, Matthew records it this way. Hold your finger here and go to Matthew chapter 4. Jesus is beginning His ministry the way Matthew records it. And we've seen how Luke recorded that, but notice how Matthew records it. He goes into Galilee after he hears that John is in prison in verse 12. And he goes into the land, verse 13. He left Nazareth, which was his hometown. He came and he settled in Capernaum, which is by the sea in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. This was to fulfill what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet. The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people who were sitting in darkness saw a great light. And those who were sitting in the land and shadow of death, upon them a light has dawned. And from that time, Jesus began preaching, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. The Gentiles were sitting in utter darkness. They were lost until Jesus came. Kind of the way that we were, isn't it? Until we come to Jesus, we are sitting in darkness. But Jesus is the light that has come into the world, John chapter 1. These people don't have Jesus in their thoughts. These people don't think about Jesus. They are in darkness in their understanding. They do not have Him. And so therefore, back in Ephesians 4 verse 18, they are excluded from the life of God. They don't know God, and God doesn't know them. Depart from me, I never knew you, you workers of lawlessness. We would not like to think that God never doesn't recognize me. I think about how scary that would be one day if I ever get before God. Well, not if I ever, because I will get before God. If I get before Him, and He says, sorry, I don't know who you were. You never thought about me, so I never thought about you. You just did what you wanted to do, walking after what you thought was right. Man, what a humbling, humiliating, scary thought. That's what happens when we exclude God from the picture. We don't have a life. We are walking dead in our trespasses and sins, as chapter 2 would tell us, if we were alienated from Christ. But notice why these people are excluded from the life of God, verse 18. Because of the ignorance that is in them. They don't know God. And why is it that they don't know God? Because of the hardness of their heart. We saw a hard-hearted people this morning, didn't we, with the children of Israel. And how over and over and over, and if you're in our Wednesday night class upstairs as we're going through the divided kingdom, you can't help but see how many times God sends these prophets to them and says, repent and turn. And they just keep going right on, doing the same sin time after time after time. They're hard-hearted. It's like that seed in the parable of the sower in Matthew 13. That when it's sowed, the sower goes out and he throws the seed and it falls on the first ground, the wayside ground. And it never even penetrates. The devil comes and snatches it along. I would never be a hard-hearted soul, would I? I always accept whatever God says, that's what I'm jumping on. I'm doing it. Sometimes I get hard-hearted. I want it my way. And so what happens over time, if I start doing it my own way, then I become now like verse 19. And they, having become callous, have given themselves over to it. You ever got a callus on your hand or on your foot? When I was 16, I began working for my high school, and I worked in the maintenance department in the summers. And I remember I showed up one day, and we had to dig some post holes. And I did not come prepared with gloves. my hands were rubbed raw. There were spots there that just hurt. Well, as the summer went, those hands got tougher. What used to hurt didn't hurt anymore. They got calloused. That's what happens the more we persist in doing the things our own way without God. What used to bother us no longer bothers us anymore. We're callous to it. We're hard-hearted to it. And we just give ourselves over to it because that's the way the world is. That's the way everybody else is doing it. That's the way everybody in the pew sitting next to me is doing it. And that's the way everybody in my school does it. And that's the way everybody at work does it. And ain't no sense in fighting anymore. We get hard-hearted and do the same thing. Am I better than the Gentiles? And then he says, they've given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity and greediness. That's our culture, isn't it? The things that are on TV, all about sex in many ways. We just give ourselves to it. We don't think anything about it. That's just what the TV show is about. That's just what the movie is about. Is that what Christian needs to be thinking about? I tell you, I'm still haunted, if haunted is the right word, by some of the music and movies that I used to watch. Where I still think about that stuff all the time because of what I saw and what I listened to. And my mind hasn't been able to block it out because it is there. But you know what? If I just keep giving myself to that kind of stuff and I say, you know what, I remember that from time to time. You know what, let me go back and let me check this out one more time. I really like this from this part. The next thing you know, man, I'm right back in it again. Doing the exact same things that used to bother, don't bother anymore. And that's the way it goes with sin. We just finally stop fighting, we callous to it, and give yourself over to it all. But what does Paul say? He says in verse 20, but you've not learned Christ in that way, have you? That's not what a Christian is supposed to be, is it? A Christian is not supposed to be walking in his own thoughts and his own futile thoughts, doing whatever it is he wants to do. But what is he supposed to do? Go down to verse 23. You be renewed in the spirit of your mind. A Christian's mind is not futile if it has been renewed, if it has been given new life, new thoughts from God. Anything is noble, anything is worthy of praise and so forth. Meditate on these things, Philippians chapter 4. Romans chapter 12. Therefore, by the mercies of God, I beseech you, brethren. What's he beseech us to do? Be transformed. Let's read it because I can't quote it at the moment. Oh, by the way, remember this morning we said Christians needed to be begged, need to be urged? This is one of those times. Chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore I urge you, brethren, same word, by the mercies of God to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect. My mind has to change. As a Christian, my thought processes have to be different than when I was walking in the futility of my mind. So in verse 23, going back to Ephesians 4. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self, which is in the likeness of God, having been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. A Christian is to be holy and pure, not impure and seeking his own things. Am I better than the Gentiles? Second group, turn me to Luke chapter 2. Or not Luke chapter 2, Luke chapter 6. Am I better than a sinner?
Now you say, wow, Wes, that's pretty vague.
Yeah, you're right.
We'll see what Jesus says about that.
Luke chapter 6, this is what is often called the Sermon on the Plain. Where we got the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, where Jesus sat down on the mountain and he spoke to the people. In Luke chapter 6, he's in a plain. And he says some of the very similar things, but I don't think it's the same. I don't think it's the same sermon at all. I want you to read with me verse 32 to see where we get this phrase, the sinner, and then we'll back up a few verses. Verse 32, Jesus says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. So there's our, this is what the sinners do, what do you do? So now let's go back. What does Jesus say? Go back to verse 27. Jesus says, but I say to you who hear. And that kind of reminds you when Jesus would use the phrase, he who has an ear, let him hear. Meaning, listen up and get your spiritual heart open. Get your spiritual ear open. Let's see what I got to say. What does he tell them to do? Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who mistreat you. Whoever hits you on the cheek, offer him the other also. And whoever takes away your coat, and whoever does not withhold your shirt, let's read that again. Whoever hits you on the cheek, offer him the other also. And whoever takes away your coat, do not withhold your shirt from him either. Give to everyone who asks of you. And whoever takes away what is yours, do not demand it back. Treat others the same way that you want them to treat. These are some of maybe the most difficult words that Jesus ever uttered. We're not talking about people that I don't like, are we? Who are we talking about when he says love? Love those who hate you. What's the second greatest commandment? Thou shalt, we said it this morning, love thy neighbor as thyself. As a Christian, do I have anywhere in my heart to hate anyone? No. Not if I'm going to be pleasing to God. There cannot be that there. Well, unfortunately, sometimes we want to hate people. We're the enemy sometimes, aren't we? Where we're going and we're mistreating folks and we're saying things about folks. And I've been just as guilty of this as anybody else. And we're saying things we ought not be saying about folks, tearing them down. That's not the place of a Christian. I'm not any better. What's he say? Love your enemies. Love those. Do good to those who hate you. Someone came to me not too long ago and they were just bawling. Because there was a difficult situation in their apartment building. Where they were trying to evangelize to this particular person. This person was just, they were just being rude. They were just being mean about it. Causing them all kind of trouble. And this person was just, they were just tore up. I thought, what are you supposed to do about that? They're causing you all kinds of problems. They're your enemies. They're out to do you some harm. Pray for them. You think about what it said in Romans chapter 12, again, hold your finger here in Luke 6. Go to Romans chapter 12. Verse 17. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. I hate that verse. I'm not going to lie to you. There are some times I want to get some folks back. Never repay evil for evil. And verse 18, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all. That's my responsibility. My responsibility is to be at peace as much as possible with all. There will still be people that hate me.
There will still be people that hate you. Well, what am I to do with them?
If my enemy hungers, feed him. And if my enemy thirsts, give him something to drink. And in so doing, you'll heap coals of fire upon his head. Do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. It's part of that renewed mind. It's part of the way I used to get folks back is not the way I can get them back anymore. Now I, quote, kill them with kindness. And man, that hurts. If you've ever been the enemy and they started being super nice to you, man, that burns. That hurts. That's what Jesus is saying to do. And so getting back to, am I better than a sinner? He's saying, this is what you need to do. So don't think it any credit if you go back to Luke chapter 6 and verse 32. If you love those who love you, congratulations, you're doing the easy job. It's easy to love people who love us, isn't it? They're giving to us and they make sacrifices for us and they want the best for us. And we say, yeah, man, I want to do something for them. I want to give back to them, blah, blah, blah. That's easy, isn't it? He said, even the sinner does that. Well, verse 33. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend in order to receive back the same. Sometimes we really feel this way. We've given to someone over and over and over, and we're expecting something back in return, and nothing comes back, and it ends up being just kind of like an empty hole. You just keep pouring into it, pouring into it. You find us get your pet up with it. I'm never going to get any ROI, return on investment. And that's what I've been doing the whole time for. I maybe didn't start out doing that, but over time it just got, are you serious? We're at this again? What credit is it if you want something back? You do it because they are in need. For verse 35. But love your enemies and do good and lend. Expect nothing in return. And your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High. For He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. Think about that for a second. The Most High is a term that Luke uses very often about the Father and how He is the King of Kings. He is the Most High who rules in heaven and on earth and in the kingdoms of men, going back to the book of Daniel. He says, you know what you are if you do that? You're the Son of the Most High God. Because He gives to the ungrateful. I've never been ungrateful in the things that God has given me, have I? And I sure have all the time. I take my life, my breath, my clothes, my food, my car, you name it, I've probably taken it for granted, if don't take it for granted. And what's God continue to do? Send rain on the just and on the unjust. God would have the right out of anyone to just say, I'm done with you. But God demonstrates His own love towards us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for the ungodly. That's you. That's me. Am I the Son of the Most High? Am I any better than this sinner? And then verse 36. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. If you want to be like your dad, like father, like son, you got to act like it. Be merciful people. Am I better than a sinner? And the third group, if you go to Matthew chapter 23, one that we know so well and so easy, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on. But am I better than a Pharisee? This is too simplistic But I'm just going to boil it down to a very simple thing. In verse 2 of Matthew 23, the scribes and the Pharisees have seated themselves in the chair of Moses in judgment seat. Therefore, all that they tell you, do and observe. But do not do according to their deeds. For they say things and do not do them. They tie up heavy burdens and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are unwilling to move with them so much as a finger. Why do you do what you do? Am I an individual who practices what he preaches? Or am I an individual who preaches and practices totally different? We call those people hypocrites. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. Sometimes I wonder about myself, am I a hypocrite? You think because I know I shouldn't do this, and I say not to do it, but here I am, I just did it. Does that make me a hypocrite? Not necessarily. But if I just keep doing the same stuff over and over and over that I'm saying don't do, don't do, don't do, and I don't even care if I do it anymore, I've given myself to it, that makes me a hypocrite. I'm a total phony, a total show, a total liar. All of us, I think, at some point, we question whether or not, am I really giving what it's got? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because verse 5, the Pharisees, why did they do what they did? They make all these great commands and they won't do anything. But what they do, why? Verse 5. But they do all their deeds to be noticed by men. For they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments and so forth. The reason that they do what they do in their spiritual service is so that men notice them. Is that why you do what you do? I would hope not. I would think not. But sometimes that's the temptation, isn't it? Like I'm going to use that sign-up sheet out there in the back, right? That is a place where, by the way, I want you to go sign that sheet for the right motives. Saturday, May 18th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Free shot. But someone could go out there and be like, man, all these people are going to pass by this bulletin board. And if they see that I write my name on this, they're going to be like, whoa, look what so-and-so, look what I'm doing. I'm doing so much work for the church. I don't think anyone would think that. There are individuals who will. They want to be seen. So everything they do is to show, hey, look at me. Look at me. It's all about me. It's not about God. It's about me. That's not what it's all about. They, the Pharisees, they kept those who would enter the kingdom from entering and do not enter themselves. Am I better than a Pharisee? Am I better than the Gentiles? Is my mind any different? Am I pure and holy, or am I still giving myself over to sin and am just overwhelmed by it? Am I better than a sinner? And that, do I love those who hate me? Do I do good to those who hurt me? Or am I just doing good to those who do good to me? Am I better than a Pharisee? And that, am I a hypocrite? Am I doing, practicing what I preach? And am I doing what I'm doing for the right reasons? To be seen of God and to be rewarded by God, not men. Very simple, but very challenging for me. And I hope very challenging for you. If you're subject to the invitation in any way tonight, we ask that you come now as we stand and as we sit.